Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to MikeReinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today. On this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about how fast we perform range of motion after rotator cuff repair surgery.
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure you knew about my free online course on the Introduction to Performance Therapy and Training. If you want to learn how to get started optimizing and enhancing performance, this is the course for you. Head to MikeReinold.com/performance to sign up today. Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. I am joined by the team of physical therapists at Champion Physical Therapy Performance up in Boston, Massachusetts. Still zooming a little bit, partly because of COVID and spreading out, but partly because this is kind of better, right? Don't you guys think this is kind of a cool way to do the podcast?
Super cool.
We got a thumbs up from Mike Scuduto. I think that's a good sign. So, but anyway, I'm joined by Lenny Macrina, Lisa Russell, hello, Mike Scuduto, Dan Pope, Dave Tilley, everybody here answering your amazing questions as usual. So today we have a really cool question. Well, we always have really cool questions, so we just say that every time. But today from Dominic from Arizona asked this question. Are you ready? I'm trying to get suspenseful with this. How quickly do you progress range of motion with a small to medium rotator cuff tear? Okay. Then he says, I've been seeing more and more conservative post-op protocols compared to what I've seen in the past, and I'm starting to question how quickly to go in restoring range of motion and when to start using things like passive range and active assisted things like pulleys and L bars. So a couple of questions here, but really, I guess the question is how fast do we go with our rotator cuff tears? But I also, I mean, maybe we start off with, you know, do we have a period of immobilization and that sort of thing? But, you know, I'll talk about the evolution maybe, and then I don't know who wants to jump in, maybe Len with some of his experience over his years too, but like the evolution of rotator cuff repairs in just my career went from open to mini open to arthroscopic. And we've seen this huge progression in technology, right? I guess we'll call that technology. It's surgical skill, technology, technique, whatever you want it to be. But you can see this progression over time. And there is so much less invasiveness with these procedures as we've continued to progress. A rotator cuff repair, like 20 years ago, like in the late 90s, it was either open or mini open. And an open one was big. That was a big deal, right? You had a lot of muscles you were cutting through, a lot of, you know, scarring postoperative, a lot of pain, those sorts of things. And we've progressed all the way now to arthroscopic, which really has so much less pain. I hate to say minimal, right? Because I don't think that's fair to the people that just had that surgery, right? Like, but compared to an open and even a mini open, it's much less pain. So I'm wondering if what happened evolution wise is anytime this happens in physical therapy, we tend to think, well, they're doing much better. Maybe we can speed up the range of motion progression. And maybe we just regretted that a little bit. So that's a little bit of like the evolution of the cuff repairs and maybe how it progressed. I don't know, Len, you want to maybe kick it off and then you guys think about, you know, anything else in your experience?
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I agree with Mike. I mean, it's been crazy even in my career. My career is a little shorter than Mike's, and it's definitely been an evolution of the repairs being a ton better, just in technique. I mean, the pain with even a mini open, the incision was tiny going through like a deltoid split. And now with the scope, the pain is significantly less, but not crazy less. But I think because it's significantly less, people want to do more quickly, right? And so I think even like after an ACL, we tried to push people, right? I was getting people back after an ACL 4 months after their surgery. And then we realized, uh-oh, it's not probably the best thing to do because re-tear rates were high. I think the same thing is happening right now with the rotator cuff, where we tried to push the envelope a little, and maybe retail rates are not where we want them to be, but that doesn't mean their function is not going to be good. So we're at a seesaw battle right now with doctors and therapists, because the research is saying they're functionally stable and functionally good, but the retail rates can be 50, 60, 80% after rotator cuff repair 2 years out. And so the doctors are looking to say, well, maybe if we went slow with rehab, because some of the research is saying if the patient gets tight and they begin to scar down, which you, as a PT, you know that that's a pain in the butt, right? If they start to scar down and get stiff, that's what the doctors want. They want them to scar down and get stiff, because that potentially is saying that the cuff is healing really well, which means retail rates could go down long term. And so the doctors want scarring, healing. We want motion and function, and we're at a battle right now. So
What does the patient want, though, Len?
The patient wants their pain to go away. The patient right. wants their life back and function right. back, and that's where
pain
we kind of like
and function.
Right.
So the surgeons want low retail rates.
They want low retail rates. But
want range of motion and strength back. Right. We're so easy to figure out. And the patient just wants less pain and more functional activity.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem is, when you scar down and get tight, there's more pain in therapy, and you're still not getting your function back, because now you're trying to raise your arm up and you're shrugging. So it's a seesaw battle back and forth, and it's tough, because I'm on the camp of, I say, let's get them moving early. I think in the hands of a good therapist who's not over aggressive with them, we can get them moving early. We're not pushing through a ton of pain. It helps with their pain levels. It helps with their ability to control themselves at home with pain and just some of their function. And we can educate them early on and stuff they can and can't do and stuff they should feel and shouldn't feel. And so otherwise they go 6 and sometimes 12 weeks without any PT. And now they're in no man's land. They don't know what's good pain, what's bad pain, what they should be doing, what they should be doing, should not be doing. And they're only getting orders from maybe the PA or the doc in their post-op visits. And they're confused. They come in confused. So I say, get them into PT early, get them some easy motion going early. And I know I've seen very good things happen after that. So for a small to medium sized tear, if we're talking a big tear, a different world. You know what I mean? Bad tissue, it comes down to tissue quality and all that stuff. But, you know, in that small to medium sized tear, 50-year-old, you know, I say get them going early. If they're 75 and they got a big tear and it's been going on for a while, you got to go really slow with those people. You know, let them scar down, let them get stiff.
Right.
You know,
I think that's a good thing you said that, actually, because I was going to ask that question. I was going to say, does it matter who the patient is? Does it matter if they're older? Does it matter if they have poor tissue quality? Does it matter if they have a huge rotator cuff tear? Saying rotator cuff tear means nothing. Like, what do you do after a rotator cuff tear? Well, I mean, it depends on I can think of 20 factors that would significantly change what I do, right? And there's probably even more, but just thinking briefly. So what else? What about anybody else in the crowd? You guys have any other thoughts on this? I mean, I got a few things. This is the benefit of Zoom, right? I got like some slides up so I can like cite some articles, which we never do, right? But what do you guys think?
I was going to say and I think hopefully the listeners kind of got this from what you said, but if you have a huge tear, those retail rates are enormous, right? But if you have a much smaller tear, the retail rates are much lower. So age is going to play a role, as you said. So if you have an older individual, obviously that you might want to be a little bit more careful, but I think the size of the tear is going to be the biggest determinant, right, of the failure rate. So if we want to try to figure out how fast we push range of motion, you probably want to go a little bit slower with that person. Has a huge tear.
Yeah. So I think it's size, tissue quality, and age, which you could argue all feed together, right? They're probably all related, but that definitely changes it. Yeah. So think about it. So just in this conversation, we've talked about how the techniques for rotator cuff have progressed a bunch, but then I think the first evolution of this is that we found like that re-tear rates didn't improve. And I think that scared everybody. Right. So what did the doctors say? The doctors say, well, let's slow down some of the range of motion. And some of the research studies actually show that the re-tears happen in the first 6 to 12 weeks. So again, therefore, the doctors say like, well, let's do nothing for 6 to 12 weeks. But I think it's actually funny. If you actually dig into the research a little bit and you actually to like really read the methodology of some of these things, I actually think doing that isn't like very helpful, if that makes sense. And I kind of go through this in some of my talks, but it was kind of funny in some of the studies that go over the retear rate. So like I have Miller and AJSM in 2011, they did no passive range for the first 4 weeks and they still had 22% fail in that period.
Yeah.
Right. So that wasn't very helpful. Right. Iannotti and JBJS 2013, they had immediate range of motion and only 10% fail. So what does that tell you? I mean, theoretically, if we're using the A equals B equals C kind of concept, then you would say that passive range motion early would be helpful. But I think as we get older and we learn a little bit more, Kim, AJSM 14 kind of said immediate passive range of motion for small to medium tear had no failures. No passive range of motion for 6 weeks with a large tear still had 33% failures. So I think what we're learning here is it's probably not physical therapy. Excuse me, it's probably not the range of motion that we're performing, right? There's, I don't know, excuse me, there's probably like 5-6 systematic reviews right now that kind of look at this. It doesn't really show a difference in there, but doctors are still conservative. And I think the main thing is we should be conservative with the large tears. And I think we all should be conservative. The other one thing, anybody else have any, I got one other thing I want to hit, but anybody else have anything? I don't want to just keep talking. Yeah.
I just have one thing I've learned from Lenny and Mike, especially as I've kind of gone through this, is like we look at the retear rates and we look at like on an ultrasound or something like that, like they're tearing, but then like the person's okay. Their arm doesn't hurt. They're moving their arm pretty well, like 6, 7, 8 months down. And so like you got to just throwing a wrench in the gears, right? Like just because they have a retear on a clinical exam or in some sort of imaging, if they're doing fine, then who's to say that was an unsuccessful therapy? If they can move their arm well and they're back to their daily life, then it's like, okay. And I remember Lenny like citing some stuff where people did great, but the retail rates were high under imaging. It's like, okay, well, what do we define as successful then? So that's just my 2 cents.
Right. Will that tear increase though over time in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, will that tear get worse? I think about 50% right. of those people, it may happen to. It seems like the research is saying 40 to 60%. If you have a tear in your shoulder and you treat it non-operatively for those people, it turns into a bigger tear. So I think it would, the same concept would probably happen in somebody who has a repair shows retear. Do you want to be, it's a 50, it's a coin toss. Is that tear going to get worse over time? So, and the doctors say, we don't want that coin toss. We want the odds in our favor. And I get it. Yeah. I completely get it.
That sounds like fear mongering, Len.
Yeah.
I dare you to put that on Instagram that, but people with tears will extend to worse tears over time, which is, I don't know, the Journal of Common Sense.
Right. That's what right? I just like, posted on Instagram.
And Pope just put that on Instagram.
Like 3 days ago. Well,
so, right? Yeah, Pope just put that on Instagram. So it made me think deeper about it too.
I love the Instagram things that say, well, you know, having a tear doesn't mean, you know, they have symptoms or anything like that. Right. But man, I don't want a tear. Right. Do you want to tear? I don't want to tear. Let's not keep snatching. Right. Like that seems like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Dan, Go ahead. I was going to say, this is pretty fresh in my mind because I did a pretty big lit review on the rotator cuff recently. And Dave is right with most of the research. The outcomes, a lot of the outcomes are insignificant differences between the ones that had failures and the ones that did. I think the main thing that popped up is there's a difference in strength generally from what I found. So they are a little bit different. And then the last piece, like you said, the retear rates and whether or not that matters. And again, that probably comes down to the person's age and, you know, a lot of other factors. So that's a tough call.
Listen, we can cherry pick the research. The doctors can find stuff for them. We can find stuff for us. The way I usually, if people ask me this question, my 1 hour of rehab 2 to 3 times a week, there's no way I am re-tearing that rotator cuff with my 3 hours worth of total PT, maybe in a week, compared to what? How many hours in a week? 24 times seven. That's like a lot of hours. How is my 3 hours of rehab and education, all that, going to really re-tear when the research is back and forth? We know it's back and forth. It says PT is helpful and good, and then some say no. So there's so many different factors than to just blame PT. That's the way I usually sum it up to people.
All right, fantastic leadway to my last point here. So looking at EMG of the supraspinatus during functional activities, passive, look, with two ends of the spectrum, passive range of motion is 5% EMG of the supraspinatus, right? Which I don't know. I wonder if you argue that's noise. I don't even know, right? Or just there's something like you're just using a little bit. On the other end, let's say full can exercise with a weight, right? That's 73% EMG activity. So there's our end range, right? Passive range of motion is right down there, 5%. It's passive. right? That's the name of it. So it's 5%. Pendulum's right there. Do you know what's more than passive range of motion for EMG of the rotator cuff? Brushing your teeth, taking a bath, eating, right? All those things. So I think that's a good thing with Len there is I don't think it's our passive range of motion. Now, don't get me wrong. There are some stupid active range of motion activities you can do, like a standing L bar, right? That's or the walk up the wall. Why does every surgeon want you to walk up the wall? That is just, that makes no sense. But like they say, that's a good exercise for range of motion when realistically just passive range, some of the basic active range. But how about this? I'll end it with this one because this will get you thinking right here. There is more EMG activity of the rotator cuff when you open a heavy door with your other arm.
Yeah.
Your other arm. So you're healthy. You're in the big brace thing. You open a door with your left. There's reciprocal EMG activity to help stabilize your thorax, your scapulothoracic joint. There's more EMG activity on opening a heavy door than there is doing passive range of motion. So I don't think our passive range of motion is what is bothering people. So as a
15 weeks.
Yeah. As a summary, I think we should say this because we should give good information here. We're pro passive range of motion. We think there are maybe some active assist range of motion things you can do, but the older, the larger the tear and the worse the tissue quality, the more conservative we are too. And believe it or not, I don't even know if that helps. They may tear anyway because when those factors come in, they may tear anyway. So look, that doesn't mean you have to be rogue. That doesn't mean you have to go argue with the surgeon that's sending you people. That's going to never get you another patient from them again. But like you should know some of this information that we can do some general passive range of motion. You can do some pendulums in the early phases of rotator cuff repair, and they're probably going to have better functional outcomes, less pain, and they'll be ultimately happier down the road. So if you can get a physician that understands that, that's a great person to work with. Make sense? Awesome. So good episode. I felt like we did that one and we have a lot of good advice on that one. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that at home and learned a little bit about rotator cuffs and some of our current practices. You know, it's questions like that, I think, that, you know, the evolution of things where even just in our short careers, we've seen things change over time that I think are super helpful. So if you have another question like that, head to MikeRyland.com, click on the podcast link, and there's a big form you can fill out to ask us anything you want to talk about. We try to answer as many as we can. So keep them coming, and we will see you on the next episode. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeRyland.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeRyland.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.